Tom, thank you for that introduction, and appreciate the organizing committee inviting me to attend and present this meeting. Had a great time. It's a great venue. Have really enjoyed the discussion so far. Regarding your first point, Tom, to keep it simple, I'm going to have to admit, when you get closer, that this is not going to be a simple presentation. This is going to be a little complicated. Let me set the stage. Before we get into talking about sources of biological variation in cattle, I think it's interesting to go back and look at what we've done as an industry in the last 50 years. Tom Elon and Rod Preston a couple of years ago put a really nice publication together, if you haven't seen this, where they looked at beef production trends over the last 50 years relative to cow inventory. And if you look at the numbers, we've improved productivity in beef cattle by over 80%. Well, what has been the cause or the drivers of increased productivity? You can read through that list. You know, a lot of it has been because we've taken calves instead of putting them on grass or putting them into grain feeding operations. We're using lots of technology associated with implants and feed additives and reproductive technologies, et cetera. We've also improved forage productivity. And the outcome of organizations like this have resulted in lots of productivity increases because of crossbreeding and because of selection and emphasis on EPDs to look at genetic merit for these output traits. This happens to represent that lower graph, the genetic trends in the Red Angus breed over the last 50 years. Well, what is the impact of selecting for these output traits on this thing we're calling efficiency? Well, these four studies here, I'm not going to go into detail, were conducted where they selected cattle for post-winning gain over anywhere from 3 to 5 generations. And after the end of that selection period, they went ahead and took progeny, and they put them in the feed yard and measured intake. And the real simple message here is that feed-to-gain ratio was not improved by selecting for increased gain over the control cattle. Because as cattle are selected to grow faster, they also eat more feed. And a lot of times, the maintenance requirements actually are going up and not down. And so I would argue that the last 50 years, we've made substantial progress genetically at improving output traits, but we haven't made any progress at all on true efficiency measured as some unit of output relative to inputs. Now, if you will, you can read that quote down there before below, Robert Hurd. He was the guy that ran that study, but he more or less concluded the same thing. What I want you to look at next here is what's happened in the broiler industry, the chicken industry. One of the things they've had the opportunity to do is that they, back in the late 50s, they actually kept a selection line stable. They randomly mated these birds for a long time. They've conserved them. And so recently they went ahead and grew up some of those 1957 style genetically maintained birds and compared them to typical modern broiler chickens. They also then tried to simulate the diet that was fed in 1957 and today's diet. And you can see that today's modern broiler is reaching a 4-pound market weight about one-third of the time on about one-third of the feed. And they went through there and tried to assess how much of that huge increase in productivity, efficiency, performance was due to selection versus management. Their conclusion, whether you believe it or not, I'm not quite sure, but they concluded that about 85% of that progress was made by genetic selection for things like growth and efficiency. And only about 15% was due to nutrition and management, et cetera. So it could be done. But the take-home message, I guess, this right here says to me that we have a lot of progress that is out there that we can accomplish if we get serious about feed efficiency. Okay, Harvey did a really nice job setting stage for the next part of my talk. I'm going to talk about cow maintenance and how they might relate to efficiency. If you boil it all down, if you look at an integrated operation, You know, we've got about a third of our total feed energy resources going to the progeny from weaning until slaughter. Then you got about 5% going to fetal growth and development, 14% going to milk production. And then that big fraction on the left-hand side there, about half of our energy is going to cow maintenance. And Harvey's already explained that we have genetic variation in this thing called cow maintenance. We know there's big breed differences in terms of cow maintenance requirements. Typically, those breeds, the dairy breeds, have the highest requirement. The Boston Indicus cattle have the lowest requirement. We also know that there's variation within breed. A study I was involved with back at Colorado State, we actually had the opportunity to look at identical twin calves. So we put them into calorimetry chambers. And what we found is that there was less variation in cow maintenance requirements within a twin pair than between twin pairs. To give us an indication that there is some genetic variation out there in this thing we're calling maintenance energy requirement. But as Harvey nicely pointed out, there is an antagonism between cow maintenance requirement and productivity. That antagonism says that if we were actually to be able to go out and measure maintenance energy requirements and then selected for low maintenance requirements, we're probably going to indirectly select then for low productivity. And so we're in a conundrum. Number one, it's hard to measure that trait. Number two, the genetic antagonisms are such that we can't have both low maintenance without impacting productivity. Well, that leads me to the concept that you probably have heard about, residual feed intake. Residual feed intake is a measure of efficiency primarily used in growing animals, but it's a way to try to uncouple the intake required for maintenance and growth from things like maintenance energy requirement. So RFI is a measure of efficiency that tries to quantify the variance or the deviation, if you will, of feed intake for an animal above or below what we think that maintenance requirement is. And so what we do if we select an animal that has a low RFI, we're selecting those animals that are eating less than we expect based on their body weight and gain. Given that RFI is independent of level of production, okay, what it does is, as a trait, allows us to go in and systematically then explore what are the causes of why some animals are more efficient than others. So if we have two animals that weigh the same, gain the same, but they eat at 20% difference in terms of intake, why is that one that's eating less feed but gaining the same more efficient? And so those are some things I'll try to go through and show some of the things that we do know about. But first, let me, for those that haven't really learned about RFI or you're seeing this for the first time, this little graph just represents about 180 calves, growing calves on a growing ration. And the blue dots are showing then individual animals' intake plotted against the individual animals' growth rate. And that green line represents an expected feed intake. And so we know that animals grow faster are going to eat more feed because they have a higher requirement for growth. We also know that animals that weigh more are going to eat more feed per day because they have a higher maintenance requirement. What we do with residual feed intake is we try to find that expected intake for each individual animal based on body weight and size, and then we look at the deviation in observed or actual intake. And so if you look at the top part, that circle on top, those set of animals there are eating more feed than expected. That circle on the bottom is representing animals that are eating less than expected, so those animals are going to be more efficient. Just have a picture here of two of those steers, one from that top circle, one from the bottom circle. Pick these two animals because they gain the same, weigh the same during the test, so their expected intake would be the same. But their actual feed intakes, you can see, 1,700 pounds, the steer on the left, only 1,232 pounds, steer on the right. So there's almost a 500-pound difference in feed intake during that 77-day period. So the big question again is, what makes those two animals more efficient versus less efficient? You know, what is the biology behind those cattle? Well, what do we know about RFI? We know there's been a couple of studies to indicate that there is a breed difference. Continental breeds maybe have a slightly lower maintenance energy requirement. This is a study on growing bulls out of Canada. Also, a couple of recent studies indicating that Bos Indicus cattle may have a lower residual feed intake compared to other breeds. But more importantly, we know now that there is moderate heritability, so we have lots of within-breed variation in RFI. And so this is what we're now interested in terms of testing bulls at performance tests, in terms of developing EPDs, in terms of the genetic marker discovery, to find these animals that are genetically superior for RFI or some other trait like it. Okay, we know quite a bit now, or we're beginning to know more about feed efficiency, RFI concept in growing animals. What we don't know much about right now is what's the impact of selecting a bull that has low RFI, what are the progeny of that set of matings going to do when those cattle go into the feed yard on a high grain diet, or when the progeny go out on grass, or if we have heifer replacements and they become mature cows. So there's lots of stuff we don't know, but we do have an indication that we're going on the right track. This is Australian data where they selected Angus cattle for low and high RFI, both on the female side and on the bull side. After about two generations of selection for low and high RFI, they took the progeny, put them in a feed yard on a high grain diet. And this is what they found. They found that there was no difference in yearling weight or gain. So it's indicating that residual feed intake is independent of the performance traits. But yet they saw a difference in intake. The calves born to the low RFI parents consumed less feed and had a lower feed to gain ratio compared to the progeny that came from the high RFI parents. So this is indicating that selection on bulls is going to impact progeny efficiency at one level. But it gets a little more complicated because we feed different diets to different parts of our industry. You know, the cows are always on grass, sometimes on poor quality forages. But our feedlot cattle are always on 80% plus grain-based diets. Does that influence efficiency? Well, the short answer is yes. Okay, but here's one little set of data that indicates that at least might be going in the right direction. John Basarab in Canada did a nice little study where he took a cow herd that he had about 10 years worth of production data on. And he took the calves and he measured RFI when those calves were fed a high grain diet. And then he went in and separated those calves into low and high RFI animals. And then he went and found the cows that he still had that produced those low and high RFI animals. Okay? So what he found here, you see in green that top row, the RFI of the two calf phenotype groups, negative 1.7 versus all the way to the right 1.4. Okay? So those low RFI calves, they were eating about 1.7 pounds less per day compared to the high. Again, he went, got the cows, brought the cows in to measure their intake, but on a high grain diet. Now, the good news is the cows that produce those low RFI calves did in fact eat less feed. Okay? So, almost 24 pounds versus about 27 pounds. And that was significantly different. But the challenge is that the phenotypic correlation between RFI in the calf on grain and RFI in the cow on roughage was only about 0.4. Okay? So it's not going to be a perfect relationship. There are lots of differences between efficiency in the calf and efficiency in the cow. Okay. Now, what do we know about the biology of these animals that we're going to look at in terms of efficient versus inefficient? I'm going to use the RFI concept to try to sort this out because really, if we're just looking at animals randomly, a lot of these biological factors we're going to look at are going to be influenced by their size. They're going to be influenced by their genetics for growth. So with RFI, we can pull that back to being fairly equal. So we can compare efficient animals and inefficient animals that are the same size and of the same growth genetics so that we can try to parse that apart a little bit better. This is Robert Hurd's summary back in 2004, where they looked at these Angus cattle selected divergently for high and low RFI, and he came up with this summary that the variation in RFI between cattle that have low and high RFI, about 14% was due to digestion, 9% of the variation was due to heat increment, 5% to retained energy, which means composition of gain or differences in composition gain, 5% activity. But then look on that left-hand side. About two-thirds of the variation is related to heat production of unknown sources. So that was kind of the status of that understanding back 2004. Now, there's lots of individual animal variation in basal energy expenditures, i.e. maintenance requirements. We've already kind of alluded to that. There has been a couple of studies to indicate that steers that were identified as being low versus high in terms of RFI did in fact have differences in heat production. About 10% in the study by John Bassarb in Canada, about 24% in a study by Donald and Kruma up in Canada. We also know, though, that there's a lot of potential sources of variation in energy expenditure between one animal compared to another that are at that cellular level. Things like mitochondrial efficiency, ion pumping to maintain cell membrane potential, and then things like protein turnover. A lot of studies need to be done, but I think that's going to be really where we find that true difference in metabolic efficiency is when we start looking at that level. Okay, one study we just wrapped up, this is preliminary data, but one of the things we're doing is once we identify animals being low versus high RFI, then we can go in and we can measure their heart rate for about 4 days. And that's relatively easy to measure. But then we can go in and we get these cattle come into a chute, we put a face mask on them, and we can measure oxygen consumption over about a 15-minute period of time and come up with what's called oxygen pulse rate. So this is just preliminary data to indicate that we have identified low and high RFI animals in our lab, and we've gone in and we've actually measured differences in energy expenditure. The problem now is that what is the source of that difference in energy expenditure? It could be activity. It could be a little bit related to heat increment. But then what are the sources of the difference in basal metabolism? Again, the mitochondria. I'm not going to take time today to try to go through some of this, just to indicate that Monty Curley and in our lab, we've got some evidence in muscle and in liver that the low RFI cattle do in fact have mitochondria that are a little bit more efficient at converting substrate into reducing equivalents and then into ATP for use by the body. Another key thing that might be affecting differences in biology between efficient animals and inefficient animals is their ability to digest and absorb nutrients. This is a study that we did in conjunction with the Camp Cooley folks on Brangus heifers. We did this for 4 years. At the end of each trial, with 120 heifers measured per year, we went in and took the top 20 heifers and the lower 20 heifers. So we had 20 low RFI animals and 20 high RFI animals. And we measured digestibility. And so this represents a summary of those 4 years of data. And what we found, essentially, is that the low RFI animals, more efficient animals, actually had a higher digestibility. Now, it's not very much, and it doesn't explain a whole lot of variation, but simple calculations, we can probably account for up to about 19% of the difference between those two groups of cattle due to that difference in digestibility. Okay, there's also lots of energy expended due to activity-related deals, standing, walking. So if we have cattle that are out, you know, stocked at cow-calf unit per 20, 25 acres, okay, that animal's going to have to spend more energy for maintenance than if we're stocked at one cow-calf unit per acre. But also, a cow eating forage, a lot of energy expended to chew feed, to regurgitate feed, to ruminate, okay? That's all an energetic cost. And the question then comes up is there animal variation in that activity-related energy expenditure that might help us to explain differences in RFI. One of the things that we can look at with the new technology, the GrowSafe technology, we can look at things called feeding behavior traits. And three traits that I'm looking at here on this slide, on the left there is meal duration. That's how many minutes per day an animal stands eating at the bunk. That middle trait is actually looking at meal frequency. How many meals did an individual animal consume per day? And the one on the right, the trait there, is eating rate. That's the pounds of feed an animal consumes per minute. Okay? Now, to set this up, what I've got here are the phenotypic correlations. The red bars are showing the correlations between the three traits and average daily gain. The blue bars are showing the correlations with dry matter intake. The yellow bars with feed-to-gain ratio, and the green bars then with residual feed intake. So if you look at the red bars and the blue bars, what you find, number one, is that there's no correlation with meal frequency. So meal frequency was not related to the variation in intake and gain of those animals. Weak correlations with between average daily gain and dry matter intake and meal duration. Positive, meaning those animals that were spending a little bit more time per day at the bunk, were eating a little bit more feed per day, and gaining more per day. But then look at eating rate. Pretty sizable correlations there. And so what that's telling me is that those animals that ate the most and gained the most were eating at a faster rate. They were eating more feed per minute when they went up to the bunk. Okay? So look at feed-to-gain ratio. Feed-to-gain ratio was not related at all to the feeding behavior traits. But then look at residual feed intake. There's no difference between the residual feed intake and eating rate. So the inefficient animals, efficient animals, once they went to the bunk, they ate feed at the same rate. But you look at meal duration. There's a positive correlation there about 0.4. So those animals that ate and were more efficient, okay, ate less per day or less time at the bunk per day than the inefficient ones. Here's the same study, just to be able to, so you can see some numbers. Look at the numbers here in that box. Low RFI animals, their meal duration per day was 93 minutes versus the high RFI animals, 107 minutes. Okay. Meal frequency, it amounted to about one meal per day difference between the low and the high RFI animals. But again, notice the eating rate. Eating rate at about a quarter pound per minute was the same for the efficient and the inefficient animals. What intrigued me is to find out that when we look at the variation in intake that could be accounted for by these differences in feeding behavior traits, we were able to account for about 35% of the variation in RFI. So we think that there's some pretty good relationships there between some of these feeding behavior traits and RFI. Now, visceral organ mass. Harvey again did a nice job of pointing this out. Visceral organ mass, the weight of the gut, the liver, the heart, you know, represents less than 10% of the weight of a cow, but the weight or the visceral organ mass expends 40 to 50% of the total oxygen. So these are very, very active tissues. One of the ideas is that the inefficient animals, maybe they have a lower proportion of visceral organ mass compared to the inefficient animals. And so a couple of us have looked at this. This is a result from an Angus study with finishing steers on a high-grain diet. We looked at the carcass fat there with 9, 10, 11 rib composition, and we found that low RFI animals have less carcass fat. We'll come back to that here in a little bit. But look at the weight of the empty GI tract, a little bit lower in those efficient animals by about 5%. But we found no difference in liver weight, no difference in heart weight or some of the other organs. All told, though, that's not going to account, in my opinion right now, for very much the variation in RFI. But we need to look further. There might be a difference in metabolic activity of the weight of some of these visceral organs. It might be associated with protein turnover, etc. Okay, the carcass composition and non-carcass composition traits. Very important to look at that. That's a source of biological variation. It costs a whole lot more energy per day to put down a pound of fat than a pound of muscle. And so if there's a big difference in the composition gain, that could certainly account for differences in RFI. Here's a study with Angus bulls on a moderate energy type diet. You can see there's a big difference there in RFI between the low and high RFI animals. No difference in gain. We saw no difference in ribeye area measured by ultrasound, but you can see that rib fat was about 14% greater in the high RFI animals than the low, and no difference in intermuscular fat. So what this is saying is that the fact that the low RFI animals are putting down a little less fat, that's one reason why they're more efficient, because they're spending less energy to put down less fat. In Angus bulls, we saw kind of the same thing here. Let's make sure we get the next one. In steers on grain, with the low RFI animals having less back fat, this time a little bit greater. We tend to see this as the animals are put on a higher and higher grain diet. The differential in terms of composition gain becomes a little bit wider. And so as a consequence, this accounted for more of the variation between low and high RFI animals in these steers fed high grain diets than the previous study where we were feeding a lower energy type diet. Okay, kind of summarize. RFI we know is favorably associated with a lot of these biologically relevant traits that are obviously linked to efficiency. Things like heat production, digestibility. There's some things in here we haven't talked about. Things like ability to respond to cold or to heat stress. Haven't talked about it because we don't have a clue right now. We don't have any kind of data. But if we select a low RFI animal in Texas and move it up to Billings, Montana, that animal may not be the same in terms of its rank in terms of efficiency. So thermoregulation is another key biological trait that needs to be thought about in this context. It's clear that there's lots of different biological mechanisms associated with this complex trait called feed efficiency. And that is really going to make the job of gene discovery, genetic marker discovery, if you will, very, very complicated. We already know that, but I think this kind of data just reinforces that. What we hope, though, is that these kind of studies will help to uncover the key mechanisms that are associated with efficiency and hopefully partner up with our genomics colleagues and figure out more how we can figure out that source of genetic variation. And my slide is off, so the plug has been pulled on me. So that's what I have for now. Any questions, be happy to address it.